Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello, fight fans. I'm Mo Chatra, and welcome to another edition of MMA Monthly. That's right, we're back after a 2 month gap. Just to briefly explain, we had a bit of a technical hitch with the recording of the last one, which was quite the epic recording. And so, unfortunately, we lost that due to technical issues, but we hopefully will be fine and dandy for this one. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host and colleague, the one and only Dave Hendrick. How are you, Dave?
I'm great, Mo. Rumors are that the podcast that we recorded last month is actually the greatest podcast in the history of podcasts. And given it was lost, I'm going to blame Guy for not being available to record it for us and leaving us to our own devices. Clearly, what we've learned is that neither of us are capable of recording podcasts.
Absolutely, yes. We're certainly technophobes in that regard. So, yes, that's why we're glad to have Guy back at the desk and editing and recording this, and hopefully we'll be fine. So, that's one of those all-time great podcasts which is lost forever. But never mind, we'll make up for it on this one. Right, so then, Dave, it's been quite the busy month, quite the eventful time in the world of mixed martial arts, and specifically UFC. We've got a lot to get through, and let's start with some shows that have happened in the last several weeks, and rewind back to the 28th of January for the UFC on Fox show, which emanated out of the Pepsi Center in Denver, Colorado. This was actually a pretty good show, some good undercard fights, but let's talk about the final two contests, if we can. Firstly, we had George Masvidal against Cowboy Cerrone in a welterweight contest. And some people were surprised by this because it was Masvidal that emerged victorious, TKO in the second round.
Yeah, I think I was a bit surprised about the outcome as well. But Masvidal is a really, really good striker. He's one of the better strikers in the welterweight division. And I just don't think Cowboy took him seriously enough. I think he thought he'd blitz through him. The problem Cerrone has is that he doesn't give himself enough time between fights to properly prepare. He fights too regularly, and while it's very admirable that he does go out and fight, you know, that guy will fight every 2 weeks if they allow him, but he needs to take more time between fights to properly prepare, because he's not changing his style for the opponent. He's not factoring in what their strengths and weaknesses are. He just tries to go out and do his own thing every time. And that'll work against the Matt Browns of this world, but it won't work when you step up, especially against a striker of the quality of Masvidal. So for me, this fight ended the way it did for two reasons. Masvidal's immense striking, and the fact that Cerrone just doesn't prepare properly for fights. Now, Dana White has said he's going to have to take more time between fights from now on, because this is the, I think the third pretty brutal beating that Cerrone's taken in the last couple of years. So that kind of thing will have a knock-on effect. And Cerrone is a very, very good fighter. He's a guy who's always kind of in the top, you know, 6 to 10 in whatever weight class he happens to be competing in. But he just needs to take a bit more time between his fights. I mean, Pettis beat lumps out of him. Dos Anjos absolutely annihilated him for the lightweight title. And now this. And, you know, you look at his fighting record. He fought 4 times last year, 4 times the year before, I think 4 times the year before. Like, 4 times a year is a lot. 3 times a year is about right. But he doesn't have the longest turnaround between a lot of his fights. He tends to take 2-3 fights in a couple of months and then just disappear for a while. So he needs to space his fights better. Maybe he needs to look at changing up his camp, getting not changing trainers, but just getting some different guys to come in so he gets different looks, rather than just training with the same guys over and over.
Agreed. He did certainly look flat, and in contrast, Masvidal looked supreme. And really looked primed and ready for a title shot against potentially the winner of Wonderboy and Tyron Woodley, which we'll talk about later on. The main event then had a women's bantamweight contest between Valentina Shevchenko, number one ranked contender for Amanda Nunes Championship, and Juliana Pena. And this was Shevchenko who won this one in the second round via submission, and really looked good again. So what did you make of this one, Dave?
Yeah, Shevchenko looked great in this fight. And she has looked great in all her UFC fights, with the exception of her fight against Amanda Nunes, when she got, I thought, beaten pretty comprehensively. Went to a decision, but, you know, I think it was always clear what the final result was going to be. She's a very, very good fighter, and she's very well-rounded. And that's the thing about her, is that, you know, she's got good submissions, but she's also a fantastic striker. I mean, she's got a great Muay Thai background. She does have a style, being a southpaw, that could possibly cause Nunes some problems, but she's going to have to, you know, fight on the outside a little bit more, not be so bullheaded in wanting to engage with Nunes, because if you engage with Nunes, it's going to end only one way, and that's when you're staring at the lights. But a really impressive performance from Shevchenko, and I think she is a very, very good fighter.
Oh, absolutely, that's right. As you say, competitive against Nunes, went to a decision against her, and you know, looked very, very on top of her game. And of all of the women in the bantamweight division, arguably the one that will give the champ the sternest contest. So all in all, a good night for Shevchenko, very good night for Masvidal, and a good show overall.
Can we just take a moment to point out what really made this show good was Nate Marquardt losing, because any show where he loses is good for me. I just cannot stand that guy. He's the one fighter that I always want to see him lose.
Oh, we all have fighters like that, don't we? I mean, Marquardt, surprising with him that he's still around in the UFC, really, isn't it? He's been around the MMA scene forever. I don't really understand what he offers UFC these days. As a top level fighter, he's not that anymore. He's not really a charismatic name that will, you know, draw viewing figures or attendances. He's a reliable old pro, but nothing more than that. But you know, there's plenty of hungry fighters out there that have got a lot more to offer. So,
well, he's lost 8 of his last 13 fights and 7 of his last 10. I mean, that's not a guy that should be in the UFC. Like, he really shouldn't. It's time to just, you know, cut the cord there and send him on his way. He doesn't belong in the UFC. He wasn't even good enough in Strikeforce, you know, so it's time to send him on his way.
It is, and I wouldn't be surprised if this is the year that he finally is heading back into the smaller leagues. Right, fast forwarding on to a UFC fight night that took place on the 4th of February out of the Toyota Center in Houston, Texas. I thought this was a pretty good show. It had a very, very good fight between Jessica Andrade and Angela Hill in women's strawweight contest. But this show is main evented by Dennis Bermudez taking on a fighter that we haven't seen for several years, the Korean zombie Chan Sung-jung, in a featherweight contest. And it was the returning Korean zombie that had Bermudez looking at the lights.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's always great to see the zombie back, and he's just, he's one of the most entertaining fighters in the world, but we're looking at like a 3.5 year layoff this guy has had. Like, it doesn't seem like that long, but his last fight was against Jose Aldo, where he got knocked out, but he'd broken his foot in that fight, and he was actually having some success against Aldo. It's just, it's bizarre that it's been so long since we've seen him. But it shows the kind of drawing power that he has as he comes back. And I know it's a free TV fight, but he's still the headline fight. I think he is a guy the UFC can push because of his style. The nickname is obviously very cool. There's a lot of really cool merchandise. Before he was even in the UFC, Dana White was wearing Korean Zombie t-shirts. So there's clearly something there that Dana likes him. And I think he's a guy we'll see more of. I think he's 29. So I think he's still got a good few years left. Obviously, the style he fights with doesn't really lend to a long career. Maybe that's why he's only had 18 fights in a career that began almost 10 years ago. But hopefully the fact that he's back now... Wasn't he doing military service? Is that why he was gone?
That's right.
Military service?
Yeah, he had quite a long injury layoff. And then that followed with... a stint in mandatory military service as well. So it's unfortunate in a way because, the prime years of his career, he's lost. But, as you say, he's still, the right side of 30 where a fight is concerned, and, certainly looked very sharp against a ranked fighter. So
actually, Wikipedia is telling me I'm wrong. He dislocated his shoulder. He didn't break his foot. That's why he was injured for a while.
Right.
Dislocated his shoulder against Aldo, which is obviously not going to be fun in a fight.
No. Especially when, as you say, Aldo's on the other side of the octagon. But certainly, fine return to form, fine return to the octagon, and I'm sure we'll see a lot more of the zombie throughout the year. So all in all, good show once again. The same really, though, can't be said of the show that followed, which was UFC 208, and this took place on the 11th of February, Barclays Center out of Brooklyn, New York. And I thought this was one of the worst UFC shows in quite a while, UFC 208. And let's just talk about some of these fights then. I mean, the undercard itself was very uninspiring. All of the fights went to a decision.
It was horrendous. The undercard was absolutely horrendous.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't one fight worth watching a second time.
No, there wasn't. No, it was a bunch of fighters that were very, very hesitant. And for whatever reason, despite the fact that UFC offers, very attractive bonuses for best fight, best knockout, best submission, etc. Even that aside, very poor. The main card wasn't really much better, was it? I mean, we had, let's talk about the top three fights then. I mean, we had Jacare Ronaldo Souza, the middleweight jiu-jitsu specialist, against Tim Bosch. And this was probably the only really exciting performance of the night and the only fight of the night which actually ended in a conclusive finish, where Jacare won by submission via Kimura.
Yeah, and Jacare looked great. He did. He looked out of this world. He was in great condition, and he just went through Tim Bosch like a buzzsaw. And that's what he does. He is arguably the greatest Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighter that's ever set foot in the octagon. He is on a different level. I think Damian Maia is the only one that could maybe, and obviously Royce Gracie, but that's come back a long way. But in this modern age, Damian Maia is the only one that's close to his level in terms of BJJ. So, that's what he does to people. And it was a really impressive performance against a guy who, he's just one of those who can beat a lot of fighters, but against the elite, he'll always kind of come up short. he's never really been able to put together that great run of, you know, 5-6 wins in a row and get himself a title shot. But Jacare fought the guy that was put in front of him, and he beat him, and he'll move on. He'll probably get the winner of Bisping's next fight, and I think he is going to be the champion, because I just think he's so well-rounded. But this was the only fight, and literally the only fight that I would watch back off this card. I said to you on the podcast that nobody will ever hear, this was a solid card if there was a really strong main event. But there was no main event. There was no main event caliber fight on this card for a pay-per-view. This was either a free TV card, or it was a card where they had a fight planned and somebody dropped out and they had to scrap it before it was announced, because the rest of this card just wasn't strong enough. I mean, Glover's fight was awful, and Glover's fighting a guy that has no business in the cage with him. Dustin Poirier and Jim Miller, I mean, those are guys that should be curtain jerking. Those are guys that should be on, you know, Fight Pass. That fight had no business on a main card. And then, obviously, after Jacare runs through Bosch, we get an appalling judging decision where Anderson Silva gets the victory after, I believe, clearly losing two rounds. The judge that scored at 30-27 to Silva should be stripped of his license. It was a terrible performance by Anderson. Brunson didn't do anything spectacular, but I thought he did more than
very controversial. Many writers, I mean, press row, felt that it was a fight that Brunson won. And Silva had his moments, but certainly looked nothing like the fighter that we saw, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, who dominated the UFC middleweight division. Brunson looked very composed throughout the fight. Didn't want to perhaps go too gung-ho, which is understandable given that Silva is still one of the all-time most dangerous strikers in the history of the UFC. But certainly seemed to control the contest. And, it was a surprise to many that he lost. And, that was doubly disappointing for UFC matchmakers. Obviously, they're, you know, very, very keen to start making new stars. And for a fighter that, with respect, is washed up, is no longer a top-tier, top-level fighter in Anderson Silva. For him to win, it didn't really achieve anything. I mean, if Brunson had won this, it would have been a great way to set him up for a potential title shot maybe later in the year. But that wasn't to be. Silva won, and I guess we'll see him at least one or two more times in the UFC.
I only want to see him one more time. I only want to see him one more time against one specific guy. We'll get into it later. But I don't want to see him. But it's painful. It's painful to watch. This fight, the Cormier fight, was just embarrassing to watch. The fact that he lost to Michael Bisping shows just how far he's fallen. Same with Dan Henderson. That's why I'm glad Henderson retired. The fact that those guys just don't wipe the floor with Michael Bisping shows how far they've fallen. So for Anderson, there's only one fight I want to see him have, and it's not even a fight I think he has a chance of winning. I don't think it'll even be all that competitive, but I just want to see the fight because it's a fight that was talked about for a long time. But this fight was a travesty. Derek Brunson won that fight. I don't care what anyone says. Derek Brunson won that fight, and the judges should be strongly called into question. And it's funny because I think if it was anyone other than Anderson that had gotten that victory, I think Dana White would have been out, you know, saying that the judges had made a terrible call.
Absolutely. And then on to the main event then. The inaugural women's featherweight title contest to crown a new champion, the first champion. This was a fight between Holly Holm, the former women's bantamweight champ, and Germaine de Randamie, noted kickboxer from Holland. And it was that fighter from Holland, de Randamie, who won the contest and therefore won the title in a unanimous decision victory over Holly Holm. This really was quite the flop of the main event, wasn't it, Dave?
Well, there's a couple of issues here, Mo, in that, number one, I thought even just based on scoring the fight, I thought Holm won the fight comfortably. I thought she won the fight four rounds to one. I didn't see de Randamie do anything that deserved the victory. She landed some great shots. There's no doubt she was the more powerful striker, the more accurate striker. But Holm outworked her, controlled the tempo, controlled the cage. And I didn't see what Durandamy did to win the fight. And then you factor in that we saw one of the worst refereeing decisions you'll ever see. I just thought it was a disgrace. I thought it was it wasn't a main event caliber fight for a pay-per-view like this. But the fact that Durandamy got the victory, number one, on the scoring, and number two, that she didn't have 2 points deducted for illegal strikes way after the bell. I just thought, what have we just sat and watched? Like, what have I just given half an hour of my life to, that I'm watching a terrible decision by these judges following an appalling performance by the referee? And it wasn't just the two incidents of punches after the bell that the referee didn't deduct for. It was the fact that any time they were working in a clinch, he was just itching to jump in and break them up. That guy just wanted to see a kickboxing fight. That's all he wanted to see.
That's right. Yeah, the commentators jumped in, didn't they? And, you know...
Joe Rogan said it.
The referee jumped in when there was action going on the ground.
Yeah, Rogan said it three different times. He says, look at that referee. He's waiting to jump in. He's waiting to jump in. And then all of a sudden he jumps in. And they're working against the cage. They're working for position against the cage. And the guy is jumping in. Like, I don't know what Todd Anderson does as a day job, but whatever it is, that's what he should stick to, because he's in no way qualified to be refereeing MMA fights. And I know Holly Holm has lodged a complaint and asked for the result to be overturned and for sanctions to be brought against the referee. And they better happen, or else the New York State Athletic Commission are a joke. And I know the UFC are going back there soon, but if we keep seeing results like this and performances like this, there's a lot of fighters won't want to go there, because this commission just isn't up to it, and these judges aren't up to it, and this referee is literally the worst referee I think I've ever seen in MMA at the UFC level. Because and there's been some bad ones. Mazzagatti is awful. Eve Levine's not very good. Mario Yamamoto's not very good. I mean, but this guy takes the biscuit. This guy is absolutely shocking. He put Holly Holm at risk in that fight.
Yeah, it was very poor. Very clear that being new to the whole world of MMA is a New York State Athletic Commission. You know, they've made some very grave errors in appointing a ref so inexperienced, clearly, to such an important fight. When they had somebody cage side, the New Jersey referee, I forgot his name now, the big bald-headed dude.
I'm sure it's Steve something, isn't it?
No, it's Dan Meliod.
Dan Meliod, yeah.
That's right. Now, I mean, he's not one of the best referees in MMA, but, I mean, he's certainly very experienced and would have done a far better job of officiating that contest than Anderson did. And had he done so, then we could have had a very different outcome. Certainly one, possibly 2 points deducted, and that could have made all the difference. But, yes, as you say, another very questionable decision. I mean, in terms of significant strikes, Durandamy did have the very, very slight edge over Holly Holm, but that was more in terms of leg strikes, I believe, from Durandamy. But, it was one that, again, caused much debate and left people overall very disappointed with the show. So thumbs down for that one. So let's look ahead then to shows that are coming up. And, you know, as we record this, we've got an event that's taking place just hours away this February the 19th in your adopted home country of Canada, over in Halifax, Nova Scotia, in fact. Mm. And this is another fight night. And this is a card with, again, perhaps an underwhelming lineup, which is a bit more acceptable if it's a fight night such as this show. But we've got two contests here that feature prominent fighters. And let's talk about the first of those. And that's Johnny Hendricks, the former welterweight champion, against Hector Lombard in a middleweight bout. So what do you make of this, and where do you see this decision going?
Oh, this is going to be a war. These aren't two guys that are coming out to tickle each other. These guys are coming out to take each other's heads off. So I think this is going to be a really exciting fight. Someone's going to sleep. I wonder how Johnny Hendricks is going to adapt to fighting at 185. He's had to move up because they're no longer allowed to have IVs after the weight cut. So he can't make 170 anymore.
I'll tell you what, I mean, of all of the fighters in the UFC, I thought that that change in the UFC rules probably affected him the most, because before that rule was implemented, he looked like just a world beater. I mean, okay, he did have one or two losses prior to the rule being implemented, but, you know, some of his performances at, you know, the welterweight level were absolutely superb and, you know, really, really excited people. I mean, the fight against St. Pierre, which, you know, some felt he should have won. You know, he had a great win over Robbie Lawler, a close decision win, loss rather, against Lawler as well. But since the rule came into effect, it's really seemed to have taken a number on him, and he's really, really struggled to make weight. And, you know, for the good of his health, if not nothing else, it's good that he's not allowed almost to go back down to the welterweight division and fight at a better weight of the middleweight division, albeit he still has to cut some 15 to 20 pounds just to make that weight class, because
I mean, he's a big guy. He walks around at pretty much at light heavyweight. He's a big, big guy. He's short, but he's like he's built like a tank. I'd like to see the UFC change their weight class structure. I'd like to see it like go to, say, you know, one, take it from the fives and move some of them up 5 pounds, move some of them down 5 pounds. Maybe I'd like to see a 190 class. I'd like to see a 200 class. Maybe a 215 class, and then heavyweights above that. I think you'd get more balance. I think a lot of guys could fight at more natural weight classes then, and fight against guys who are more their own size, rather than, you get some guys, they're cutting huge amounts of weight, like Johnny Hendricks, the prime example, cutting enormous amounts of weight to get himself down to welterweight, and like you say, just doing damage to himself in the long term. I know McGregor was cutting a lot of weight as well to get down to 145, and we see how much better he looks at 155 just from a physical standpoint. At 145, he'll destroy everybody. But Johnny Jones, another one. Like, Jones is a heavyweight. John Jones is a heavyweight. He cuts to light heavyweight, but he's not a light heavyweight. He's a heavyweight. He walks around about 240, 245. He's as big as a house. That's a guy who'd be fighting at heavyweight. But I reckon one of the reasons that Jones has had so many problems is because he's been cutting weight and he's doing different things to try and you keep himself down to 205. And he's having to mask that then. And it's putting a lot of strain in his body. And it's a psychological thing as well. I mean, cutting that much weight doesn't do your brain any good either. So I think the UFC, it's something they need to look at, is maybe adding more weight classes. I definitely think, you know, when Sonnen, Chael Sonnen was been interviewed recently, he talked about Anderson Silva, and he said that Anderson's natural weight class would actually be about 180. Even though he's fought at 205, Anderson's natural weight class would have been about 180. And maybe it would have been, but like, he could have fought at 190 either, and then you could have got some nice crossover with some of the guys at 205. Like, Rashad Evans is another guy who's too small for light heavyweight, too big for middleweight. A 190, 195 weight class probably would have been perfect for him. Johnny Hendricks, I don't know how he's going to do at 185. I think 180 would have been better for him. Just that 5 pounds can make a lot of difference. So this fight throws up a lot of questions, and I know the questions that this new fighters union are bringing forward as well in regards to weight classes. They want to see more weight classes and fighters not having to cut the extreme weights. So this fight will tell us a lot about the adaption of Johnny Hendricks into the 185 division. I mean, if Lombard tears his head off, then we're going to have questions. But Lombard himself is a guy who's fought at welterweight. He's only just moved up to middleweight, or moved back to middleweight. But when he was down at welterweight, he was busted for steroids, you know, because he was trying to cut weight and stuff. So it's a bit of a mess. Like, the weight classes is a bit of a mess, and this fight kind of is two guys who've been I don't want to say screwed by the system because they made choices, but they've been exposed as guys who were cutting too much weight and having to do so outside of the rules.
Indeed, yes. Will be interesting to see how it goes. I mean, if it's a win for Lombard, and therefore fourth consecutive loss for Hendricks, then you might have to even wonder if he's got a future in the UFC. So, you know, a lot at stake for both of these guys.
Both of these guys, because Lombard is coming in off two straight losses, two straight knockout losses. If Johnny Hendricks knocks him out, I think, and the fight before that was overturned to a no contest because he got busted for steroids. So I think the loser could go home after this one, Mo. I think one of these guys could end up out of the UFC.
Well, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Lombard himself, no spring chicken, just turned 39. So one of the older fighters in the UFC. And, you know, the stakes are high in this one. So we'll see what the outcome of that one is. The main event then features the number 8 ranked fighter in the heavyweight division, Derek Lewis, against number 9 ranked fighter in Travis Brown. As Jim Ross would say, this should be quite a slobber knocker, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, I think Lewis will take this fight because I think Travis Brown is on his way out. I think he's, I don't think he's had done himself any favors. I think he's working with that dreadful coach that also works with Ronda. He's just not a good coach at all. He's, you know, a lot of people like Joe Rogan will say he's one of the worst coaches out there. I saw the Joe Rogan podcast. He had, what's the name of that guy? The guy that used to go out with Ronda Rousey. He was on The Ultimate Fighter. Oh, God. I can't think of his name.
Now you're asking.
I can't think of his name. But he talked about him as well. And he obviously, he trained there a little bit when he was seeing Ronda, and he had nothing good to say about him at all. Wasn't in any way complimentary of the guy. And I think Brown is a guy who should have been a UFC champion. I think he had all the tools to do it. I think his physical tools, his natural skill, the work ethic that he had early in his career was special. And I don't think he's done himself any favors. Brendan Schaub is the guy I'm trying to think of. I think he's square with Ronda. But I just don't think Brown.
And it's Edmund Tarverdian, the coach of
I just don't think Travis Brown is anywhere close to the fighter he should have been. I mean, when you look at some of his early fights in the UFC, this guy looked like Fedor, but stretched out to 6'7". He had, you know, incredible power. He was really quick on his feet. And when you look at what he was doing when he first came into the UFC, destroyed James McSweeney, destroyed Stefan Struve, lost to Bigfoot Silva, but then came back and absolutely annihilated Gonzaga, Overeem, and Josh Barnett. I mean, Overeem and Barnett, those are two legit guys. Two guys that, when they talk about the all-time greats, those two guys are in that conversation. They're not at the top of that conversation, but they're mentioned. But since then, I mean, you know, lost to Verdum, lost to Arlovsky, destroyed by Kane, lost to Verdum again, and hasn't looked competitive in any of those fights. Hasn't looked anywhere near where he should have been. And those are the guys he should have been, especially Arlovsky. I mean, he should have destroyed Arlovsky. But those are the guys, Verdum and Kane, that he needs to be beating if he wants to be in the title picture, and he got absolutely annihilated by them all. I think Derek Lewis is going to win this fight. I think Derek Lewis is a guy with a really, you know, well-rounded game. He's a big-time knockout artist, but he's solid with his grappling. I think he's someone that can definitely put Travis Brown to sleep.
Oh, absolutely, yes. 5 straight wins in the UFC now over the last, 16, 17 months. And 4 of those by way of KO or TKO. So certainly one of the best records in the heavyweight division. And, you know, on top of that, certainly one of the younger fighters in heavyweight division in terms of ranked fighters, only 32. And given a lot of the top fighters in the division are in their late 30s or even coming to their 40s. you know, if he has a good performance here, you know, it could set him up very, very nicely for a title shot. Maybe not immediately, perhaps another one or two more fights down the line. And certainly, he's a
favorite. This will put him in a number one contender type fight, I think, or get him to that sort of level. I mean, he didn't turn pro till he was in his mid-20s. A lot of these guys, you know, that are his age turn pro at 19, 20. So he was a late starter, which should mean he peaks later than the rest as well. So I think he's just getting started. I know he's had a couple of bad losses. I mean, Mitrione beat him and Sean Jordan really badly beat him. But I think that the form he's been in the last 2 years... you know, he's run off, as you said, five straight wins, four of them by KO. That's where he wants to be right now in his career. And I think this will be a big test, because Brown is still a good fighter. I'm overly disappointed with Travis Brown and what he's become. Whereas when I saw him first, I thought this guy is going to be an absolute monster, and he never developed.
No, that's right, absolutely. But another one that will be very intriguing to see the outcome of that contest and where it leaves the careers of both the opponents in that main event. Fast forwarding beyond that show then onto the UFC's next pay-per-view, which is UFC 209, and taking place on the 4th of March in the T-Mobile Arena, and that lovely, huge new arena in Las Vegas on the Strip. And this has got a very good lineup. A lot of bigger names, and you know, we'll just talk about three of the fights coming up on that card. Let's start with Alistair Overeem and Mark Hunt in a heavyweight contest. You know, two big names, two hard-hitting fighters, and what's interesting...
Two K-1 kickboxing champions as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, the other kind of interesting dynamic to this is the issues that Hunt has had, very well-known issues with UFC regarding his loss to Brock Lesnar last year, and you know, the court action that he's taken out with them.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised when this fight was announced. I didn't think we'd see Mark Hunt for a while. I'm glad he's back, because I like Mark Hunt. You know, he's just a normal guy who goes to work, and his job just happens to be fighting. I like Hunt. I'd like to see him win this fight. The interesting thing, though, is that he's been so vocal against PED users after the Lesnar thing, and now he's fighting a guy with a very, very checkered past when it comes to PEDs. So I'm surprised he took this fight. But maybe he wants to prove a point. But I think this will be fun. I don't know if it'll last all that long. I think again, someone will be going to sleep. But I think it'll be fun while it does last. Or at least it should be.
Oh, that's right. This is certainly one which you'd be very surprised if it went the full distance. You know, two very hard hitters. And you know, both have got a point to prove. So it really could go either way, and whoever lands that first very, very powerful punch could be the one that will have his arm-raising victory. Then let's look forward to the semi-main event, which is a fight that's got many, many hardcore MMA fans very excited. It's a lightweight contest between Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson, and you know, two excellent, very well-rounded fighters. Khabib, obviously undefeated, I think he's 24-0, and then Tony Ferguson, who's been on quite the tear in the last several years, so very eagerly awaited. What do you make of this, and where do you see this one going?
This is the best fight they could have made for either of these guys. Obviously, both of them wanted McGregor. McGregor wants to take some time off, and he also wants to pursue something else, but I mean, this is going to be... I think this is going to be a great fight. I'm not... I can't even pick a winner, Mo. I lean towards Khabib. I just wonder, though, like, Ferguson hits really hard, and Khabib's strength is his grappling, and Ferguson's an absolute wizard on the ground. So I don't know. Maybe it's one of those fights where even though you look at everything on paper and you'd probably say Khabib would be the favorite, maybe Khabib's style just plays into Ferguson's hands. Very hard to pick a winner here.
It is. Khabib perhaps look to keep it on the ground. Ferguson's very dangerous on his feet. Khabib is obviously also very strong on his feet, but might be slightly wary of trying to stand toe-to-toe with Ferguson. But, you know, he's supremely confident. We've seen that when he's talked about McGregor, when he's talked about himself, clearly not lacking in any confidence. He really thinks that, you know, becoming a champion is in his destiny, albeit it's the interim title that's at stake in this one. But, you know, he'll only feel satisfied when he fights the champion, the man himself, Conor McGregor. Whether that will happen this year or further down the line, who knows? But, you know, that's a fight that Khabib wants, and you know, that's a fight that he thinks he'll get. But he's got a very formidable opponent in Tony Ferguson to get through first, and it really, really could go either way. I mean, both are such talented fighters.
Can we just take a moment, though, to point out that it is an absolute farce that this fight is for an interim title? There's no reason for it to be for a title. It's the same as that crap we saw at featherweight when
Aldo and
Aldo was just given a title, and Pettis, like, Aldo fought for an interim belt and then was just given the title, and then Pettis fought Max Holloway, and all of a sudden that was for an interim title as well. So now you've got two title holders at lightweight when the real champion is still McGregor, whether anyone likes it or not. And then there's this garbage going on as well. If McGregor wants to hand back the titles, that's fine. Maybe at featherweight, it's justified at this point because it's probably been the best part of a year. Maybe it is a year. I'm not sure since he fought at featherweight. But this is farcical that this is for a title. I think it's just their attempts to kind of throw belts around it and make everything seem more important than it actually is. This is a great fight regardless. This fight doesn't need a title. This fight would have sold. This fight would have headlined a card. I mean, how did we see UFC 208 without a headline fight? And this card has two undisputed headline fights. This Khabib-Tony Ferguson fight is one that everybody wants to see. And of course, you know, the main event is going to be a great fight because everybody loved the first fight between those two guys. But this fight could have headlined 208. And I don't know, the UFC, they're just doing really weird things with their matchmaking and their stacking of cards lately. I think this is going to be one of the fights of the year, though, Mo. I genuinely do. I think this is one of the fights of the year. And while I do think Khabib will be the favorite, it's impossible for me to pick because Ferguson, you mentioned how great his stand-up is. Like, his submissions are just spectacular. He has, I think, 6 submission wins in his last 7 or 8 fights or something crazy. He's just getting chokes and putting people to sleep. And there's very few fighters that are that good striking and that good on the ground. He's got both. Khabib's strength is his wrestling, so maybe he can control position, but I don't know, this fight just, it's impossible for me to pick.
Oh yeah, it's going to be a very close one. I do think that Khabib has got the very slight edge, and I do fancy him to win, but certainly would be no surprise to see Ferguson win, and as you say, it should be extremely entertaining. I mean, Ferguson's fought, his last 5 fights, he's either been in the fight of the night or he's had the performance of the night, so, you know, he's a very exciting fighter, and Khabib himself, you know, with the right opponent, can certainly take part in a very exciting fight too. Let's talk about the main event then. And, you know, this is another very eagerly awaited one for the welterweight title, this between the champion Tyrone Woodley against the Wonder Boy, Stephen Thompson. So do you predict an upset with Thompson becoming the champion, or will the champion retain?
I'd like to see Wonderboy win this fight. I thought Woodley won the first fight. At the time, I thought maybe Thompson won it, but I've watched it back a couple of times. And I think Woodley did win the fight. I just... this time, I don't know, I just think Thompson will find different things to throw at Tyrone. And I just think with Woodley, you know what he's going to do. He's a very predictable fighter. He's the typical wrestler with a big overhand right. That's what he is. That's what he does. You don't know what Thompson's going to do. I'm not sure Thompson knows what Thompson's going to do from, you know, 1 minute to the next. So the unpredictability is what Thompson has going into this fight. And if he maximizes that, and if he can keep Woodley, you know, off his timing and keep him at distance, I definitely think he can take the win here.
Oh, certainly. You know, it was a draw the last time round when these two fought back in November. And, you know, would have given Wonderboy a lot of confidence, really went toe-to-toe with Woodley. Some felt that he won it. And, you know, Woodley, in contrast, will feel he's got something to prove. He knows that, you know, those that felt he didn't win it and, sorry, wasn't deserving of the win. And, you know, he'll certainly be going into it wanting to prove a point to show that he is the main man in the division. So, again, very, very close. Could go either way. But I actually fancy an upset, albeit it's a slight upset, with the Wonder Boy becoming the new champion. But a very, very good card.
Sorry, Dave. I think the shadow that looms over this welterweight fight, though, is GSP. And I think there's always going to be a large number of people who'll see whoever has the welterweight title, and until they face GSP, they'll just view them as a paper champion. I agree with what you said earlier. I thought Johnny Hendricks beat GSP as well, but he, you know, GSP got the result and then he walked away. And I think GSP would beat these guys comfortably. Personally, I think GSP in his prime beats either of these guys comfortably. So I think with Woodley is the type of guy who, you know, he's got a bit of an ego. He likes to talk himself up. He wants those big fights as well. So for him, I wouldn't be surprised if he's kind of looking beyond Thompson and looking at that potential GSP fight. And maybe that's what will cost him in this one. Maybe, you know, he won't be fully focused on the task at hand, and Thompson can take advantage.
Indeed, yes. Quite right to point out that GSP is one fighter that certainly looms large, casting a big shadow over the welterweight division, and with huge amount of talk about his imminent return back to the UFC, you've got to imagine that he'll be right back in the title mix, you know, within a short space of time. And whether it's Woodley or the Wonder Boy walking away with a title, Georges St. Pierre will certainly be a person that we talked about as a potential next opponent. So, yes, exciting times all round where that shows concern, and also with the welterweight title. Then there's just the one more show that we'll kind of preview then, and that's the UFC's first foray back into Brazil with a fight night headlined by Vitor Belfort, the Phenom, against Kelvin Gastelum in a middleweight contest. And, you know, this is a potential career-defining one for Gastelum if he was to pull off a victory here. And it might, you know, in contrast, even be Belfort, swan song, win, lose or draw. So another intriguing contest.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting fight. I mean, Vitor will be the heavy favourite going into it. I think Vitor's at the end of his run. I think this could be his last you know, farewell. For Gastelum, the path to victory is very clear. Survive the first round. You survive the first round with Vitor, and your chances of winning go from 20% to 65%. Vitor is a guy who burns himself out in that first round. He's done it his whole career. You can look at his whole career, and the vast majority of his wins come in the first round. If it goes beyond the first round, that's where, you know, his losses are. I'd like to see Vitor go out on a high. He's one of the most spectacular fighters we've ever seen. Maybe the most naturally gifted fighter that there's ever been. Incredible striker, good jiu-jitsu. but just never could put it all together. Maybe there's some confidence issues, I don't know. But he's never been as good as he should have been with the talent that he had. Made some poor decisions, obviously has failed a bunch of drug tests as well. But Vitor is a guy that I think anybody who's a real MMA fan has enjoyed watching Vitor as much as anybody that we've seen, and they include Anderson and all those guys in that. Vitor, at his best, was just, he was spectacular to watch. He was so much fun. And he was a killer. Like, he didn't go in there to get a decision. He went in to end fights, and you have to hand it to him. He's had a great career. And if he does knock Gastelum out or get beaten, and then he says, look, that's it for me, you know, the Hall of Fame is next for him, because that's the caliber of fighter he was. He was fantastic.
Oh, absolutely, yes. One of the all-time greats. You know, he's somebody that I've almost grown up with, pretty much the same age as myself. And in all the years I've been watching UFC, even in those dark days when he used to run shows in those outlaw states in Mississippi and places like that. He was there. He was there for UFC, then ventured elsewhere. But, you know, being a staple part of the mixed martial arts scene throughout its evolution, and certainly a very highly regarded fighter. As you say, one who you have to feel didn't quite fulfill his potential. I mean, the death of his, or disappearance initially, of his sister back in 2004 must have had an impact on him. And,
that's it. And that was right about where he was. I mean, what age was he? He was 26, 27 at the time.
Yeah.
And he'd been around a while at that point. So that was his sort of prime. I mean, we're talking about Vitor made his debut in 1996. We're 21 years into Vitor Belfort's career. And, you know, it is just one of those things where that happened and all of a sudden, I mean, he'd just beaten Randy. I know it was a doctor stoppage, but he'd beaten Randy. Then that happened, and then he lost to Randy. He lost to Tito. He lost to Overeem. And he was never really the same, but he was so exciting back in the day. I mean, everybody's seen the highlight of the fight against Vanderlei, where he just blitzed through him and destroyed him. I think there's real scope for arguing that Vitor is one of those guys who, you know, really defined mixed martial arts and the evolution of it, because he was one of the very first guys that was really well-rounded. But, I mean, look at the names he's got on his list. Like I said, Vanderlei, Randy Couture, he beat Rumble Johnson, he beat Michael Bisping, he beat Luke Rockhold, he beat Dan Henderson, he beat Rich Franklin, he beat Matt Lindland. That's a really strong who's who.
It's a who's who of the middleweight division, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And you know, look, I know he's had some tough losses, and of late he hasn't had the best kind of run, but I mean, what a career that guy has had. Like, he beat Dan Henderson twice, he knocked Dan Henderson out twice. That tells you, like, he's still absolutely lethal as a striker. And I mean, his knockouts, you look at the knockouts in the last couple of years: Bisping head kick punches, Luke Rockhold spinning head kick punches, Dan Henderson head kick, Dan Henderson again, head kick and punches. A spectacular, spectacular fighter. But he's been knocked out three times in the last 2 years by Weidman, by Jacare, and by Musasi. So for me, I think it is time to call it a day for Vitor. His fighting style has put him in harm's way, shall we say, and I think it might just be time to hang it up after this fight. He's not the only one in this card. There's another legend on this card in Shogun who I think should hang it up as well. Another guy who, just an exceptionally exciting fighter. You remember the Pride days, Mo, where that guy looked like he was the best fighter in the world. His knees just failed him when he came to the UFC. I think he had three torn ACLs. And he never recovered. But for those who saw Shogun and Pride, they know what that guy was. And again, those who saw Vitor destroying everybody when the mood took him, you know, these are two guys that all of MMA owe a great debt of gratitude to, and all of MMA should say thank you to. And I'd like to see them both. It's one fight I would have loved to have seen at some point, with Shogun against Vitor. We'll never see it, I wouldn't say, but I think both these guys should go out after this card.
Indeed. And in fact, just going back to one of the things you mentioned earlier on about how you might want to see Anderson in one more fight, what would that opponent be? Belfort? Or
no,
that you had in mind?
It would be GSP.
Okay.
Because when they were both dominant in the UFC, Anderson at 185, GSP at 170, there was a lot of talk that there was a super fight in the works, that maybe they'd meet halfway at 177.5. Anderson was confident he could make the weight. GSP obviously would have no problem fighting at 177.5. There was a lot of talk for a lot of years that was a fight that Dana wanted to put together. And I just think with GSP back and, you know, Anderson probably on the way out, maybe, look, Anderson might hang around for a few years and just collect some paychecks. And if that's what he wants to do, he's pretty much earned the right to do it. But at the same time, it's not fun to watch Anderson fight anymore. But the nostalgia factor of a GSP-Anderson fight, given they dominated basically a decade of the UFC, it could be fun just to watch that fight and then see Anderson say goodbye. And then see GSP go and fight whoever is on the card for him, whether it's Woodley, Wonderboy, or what would unquestionably be the biggest fight in MMA history against Conor McGregor. I think GSP coming back against Anderson would be just a way to ease him back in, but also, you know, a fight that people would want to see. I think it'd do big numbers.
Oh, it certainly would, yes. A dream fight for a long, long time. And if it was to happen, if the UFC matchmakers could put it together, it would certainly be huge. Right, so just before we finish, just a couple of other stories that have been the talk of the MMA scene in the last couple of weeks. First of all, there's a certain individual by the name of Brock Lesnar who has once again announced his retirement from UFC and mixed martial arts. So what did you make of this story when it broke?
Off to some more steroids. By retiring, he gets taken out of the testing pool, so he can now do steroids for another 12 or 18 months, then declare he wants to fight again. And, you know, he can have reaped the rewards of all the steroids he'll put into himself. I've never enjoyed watching Lesnar fight. I've never felt he was a particularly good fighter. He just was bigger than everybody else. I think we saw him get beaten by Mir. We saw him get destroyed by Overeem, destroyed by Kane. Shane Carwin was beating him comfortably until he gassed out. So I don't want to see Lesnar. Lesnar fighting doesn't interest me at all. He should stick to WWE, where maybe his rampant steroid usage is more acceptable to his paymasters. But I think the only reason he's walking away from MMA at the moment is because he wants to take more steroids. That's it.
Well, I don't like to be cynical, but I can't disagree, Dave. You know, we've got the small matter of WrestleMania coming up for the WWE.
Got to take them steroids before Mania. Got to look good for Mania.
Absolutely, yeah. Got to be in tip-top shape for the big show. So, you know, it's not surprising, is it? You know, and also we wouldn't be surprising if, you know, as you speculated, another year, 18 months down the line, he announces another comeback. But
the thing as well, though, is that there's a chance that he goes into Mania and comes out the WWE champion, because we know he's going to fight Goldberg. There's a chance that Goldberg walks in as champion, and Lesnar's beating Goldberg at WrestleMania because he's lost the last couple of times. So he's getting the payoff. So maybe he's just been told, by the way, you're walking out of Mania as champion, we're going to need you to do a full schedule. So that might have a factor in it as well, that he's just not going to have time to do UFC fights. He's going to run with the belt. Maybe it'll be his last run with the belt for, you know, 6-8 months, whatever. So that could be a factor as well.
Indeed, absolutely. So, you know, plenty of scenarios, but for more wrestling talk, join us on the Pro Wrestling Index as well, which I'm part of every week. And then finally, before we go, we can't end the show without talking about the story that never ends, that always creates talk within the MMA scene and beyond. It's will it happen, won't it happen? Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather Jr. So they keep teasing us, Dave. Do you think it actually will happen?
I think there's too much money to be made for it not to happen. I think we're potentially looking at the biggest fight ever in terms of pay-per-views. They could beat the Mayweather-Pacquiao pay-per-view numbers.
4.4 million.
4.4 million because, look, McGregor's just got that appeal and Floyd has that appeal. And everybody will want to see Floyd fight one more time because everybody wants to see Floyd lose. Floyd will be going for 50-0, which hasn't been done. So I think there will be a huge amount of interest in this fight. I think you'll get all the crossover fans from both sports will buy in. And I just think there's probably $1 billion to be made here overall for, you know, to be split up amongst promoters and McGregor and Mayweather and whoever else. So I just think this fight has to happen because there's just too much money involved. For McGregor, it's a no-risk fight. If he loses, well, he's not a boxer, so why should he win? But he has everything to gain because if he beats Floyd Mayweather, then all of a sudden he's the biggest star, not only in MMA, but he's the biggest star in sports. And he's beaten arguably a top 10, top 5 boxer of all time. Now, for Mayweather, the out is, well, I'm old, I'm retired, I'm you know, many years past my best, and I was sitting at home for 2 years. So there's a lot of positives. The positive for Mayweather, obviously, is the chance to make another 100 million. There's no real negatives for either of them, except for Mayweather, the tarnish on his legacy of being 49-1 rather than 50-0. I think it will happen, Mo. I think they're going to figure it out eventually. I think Dana likes to posture and likes to say a lot of things, but at the end of the day, for all the mouth, Dana doesn't really have much say in what happens because he doesn't own the company. He's just an employee. And we saw when the Fertittas were running the UFC that Dana would say things and then get overruled. And that was when he had much more of a say than he does now. So I do think this will happen. I think it will happen with the UFC as a co-promoter, with McGregor and Mayweather. I think the only question left is where and when. I'd love to see it in Dallas, in that beautiful stadium they have there. And I'd love to see it happen. I think it should happen. It'd be fun. Like, that's what fighting's about. It's fun. Let it happen.
Indeed, yeah. And, you know, we might even see Mr. Hendrick at Pressure Roof and when it does.
Oh, if it happens, I'm there. If it happens, I'm there. My man Bob Sturm, number one sports guy in Dallas, the king of Dallas sports. Bob Sturm has guaranteed me front row seats for that fight. So if it happens, I'm there. That's a once in a lifetime. That is.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you have it, listeners. One half of the MMA Monthly crew will be on hand live and in living color to witness that historic fight if and when it happens. And the feeling now is that it's much less of a fantasy. It could well become a reality in 2017. And if it does, or when it does, we'll be here to talk about it. Right. So before we wrap
one
up,
thing I wanted to mention to you.
Yeah.
Bellator.
Oh, yes.
The nonsense where Mitrione has to pull out of the fight. The Fedor debut is delayed. Whatever. That's not what I actually want to talk about. Scott Coker came out and said he was approached by three different fighters who were willing to step in on short notice. One of them was Chael Sonnen. It's no surprise that Chael would take that fight, given it's Chael. He's always been one who'll just turn up and fight, and he's coming off an embarrassing loss. I can't remember who the other one was. But the third guy he named was Tito Ortiz. Now, only a couple of weeks ago, Tito Ortiz said he was retired. That was it. You know, he did the thing where he put his gloves in the octagon and he brought his son in and it was a load of big wank and he said, that's it, I'm done, and you're never going to see me fight again. But then all of a sudden he's willing to fight Fedor. Now, I don't think Tito's done. I think we're going to see Tito again. I'm not sure who it'll be against. Maybe it'll be against Fedor. But I wanted to get your thoughts on it. I mean, for me, I don't know why Tito is retiring when there's the Fedor fight. I know why he's retiring, because he's no good anymore. But there's the Fedor fight and there's the Vanderlei rematch that Vanderlei desperately wants. Do you think we'll see Tito again?
Absolutely, yes. You know, he's a guy that you just can't take him seriously, can you? I mean, if the money's right, if the opponent's right, you know, he'll come back. I mean, the whole thing with the gloves and everything else is just meaningless. It really is. The actions of somebody with very little credibility. As much as he's been a big star in MMA for many years, you know, we all know that he's just one of the less reliable and trustworthy individuals within the sport. So, yeah, I mean, if the fight with Fedor's there to be had, and he'll know that he can make a couple hundred thousand or more, he'll go for it. He'll come straight out of retirement and have it. So, yeah, in answer to the question, yeah, it can happen and it probably will. Right then, well, that brings us to the end of the show. So before we go, Dave, it's plugs time. Have you got anything to plug or promote?
Yeah, a few things. Everything on Anfield Index, obviously. I believe Gennaro and Gags are doing a podcast next week. I think it's going to be entitled We're 5 Foot Six and Under, a short pod. That's a private joke. So, yeah, that'll be fun. There's loads of great stuff out in AI at the moment. Mark Simpson sat in for John Ritchie on the latest Red Room. That was really good. Liver Birds was really good. If everybody could do me a huge favor and message at Fidzy and tell him to get Jumpers for Goalposts done and out as soon as possible. If you haven't listened to the Jumpers for Goalposts City and Club series, make sure you do. They're the best thing going. I'm doing a few bits and pieces in the next kind of 2 weeks. I'll be doing Total Football with Gennaro. There are rumours that there may be another podcast in the next 2 weeks. I'm doing some stuff for World Football Index. I'm going to do a podcast with football purists. So there'll be a fair bit from me. I'm sure me and Mo will be back soon. And I might even get invited onto the wrestling pod soon.
You never know. Oh, it'd be good to have you back on, Dave. It was a pleasure to have you on the early Pro Wrestling Index shows from nearly 2 years ago now, I think it is. It'd be great if, you know, schedules and time differences allow for you to be back on that show soon. But that's pretty much the only thing on top of what Dave's already plugged. I just want to plug my weekly Pro Wrestling Index podcast, which I feature with Andy Wells. And, you know, we're now into the run into WrestleMania. So very, very busy few weeks coming up. Lots to talk about on that podcast, that's something for wrestling fans to go and check out. Well, that brings us to an end to a very content filled MMA monthly. We had a lot to talk about. We've crammed it all into just over an hour. Join us again next month, where we'll be talking about all the other happenings of all the shows that we've previewed, as well as all the upcoming events from the end of March and into April. So thanks for joining us, and join us again next month.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.